Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Hops and Handshakes. It is numero 13. It is lucky 13. We are in downtown Grand Rapids at Grand Rapids Brewing. It's on the window, so I can remember where we were. It's pretty cool. With my good buddy of mine here, Jovan Jovanovic. Man, thanks
good
for stopping by.
Absolutely. Good
Absolutely
to see
cheers.
You.
What are you drinking
cheers.
First?
I'm drinking a Silver Foam, top one.
What do you think?
That's good.
That's good, yeah. Alex, what are you drinking?
Flow.
What's in it?
It's a New England IPA.
Oh, yeah, of course.
This was a big Grand Rapids Brewing beer back in the 4. They readapted the name.
No kidding?
Yeah, I just read about it the other day.
Oh, okay. That's like, how the hell do you know that?
Just read
All right.
about it.
All right, Jovan. So, for those of you, some of you watching this, you'll know Jovan. Some of them have been good friends a long time. He actually left us last year as a West Michigan person. Chicago and West Michigan, and actually is in California. Came back to join us here in Cold Drury, Michigan. But anyway, there's a little background. Jovan, tell us what's been going on.
Back, it's a little cold.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good though. It's nice to be back. Yeah. As you know, my office is still here.
Okay.
So I go back and forth quite a bit. All the staff is here, and we're hiring here.
And Jovan, patent attorney, been at it a long time. What do you specialize in?
So we do a lot of work in the software area, a lot of work in hardware, and then a lot of work in mechanical, electromechanical devices, bag filling, box filling, excitement.
So the iPad Pro new pencil drawing feature, drawing on the iPad and on the diagrams has been life-changing for you?
Life-changing.
Okay, gotcha.
Life-changing.
No printing and scanning anymore?
No.
Perfect. All right, so talk about that transition. So business is here, your team here, right? You go to California, which is roughly 2,400 miles away or whatever.
Give or take,
something like that. How did you get to the point where you could actually leave your team? Because, I mean, most people have to work where their people are, right?
So it was a transition we knew we were going to make, and panic set in about a year and a half, maybe a little bit more, before we were going to move.
Yeah.
To where I said, look, I don't know if I can do this. How can I not be where everything else is?
Sure. A lot of clients here in West Michigan as well.
Not as much the clients. So I have clients here, I have clients in Illinois, clients in California. But how do you have a system and an infrastructure set up that you can wake up and do something from anywhere ongoing?
Exactly.
Not gone for a week, not gone for 2 weeks, but gone for 52 weeks.
Sure.
Much different ballgame.
Oh, God, yes. Absolutely.
So,
it's so easy to, when you're there, to just make the thing that you don't really have ironed out, it's so easy just to throw 2 cents in that 3-minute conversation and tweak it and get it done the way it's done.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But if you can't do that readily available, you have to figure out how to basically reverse engineer what could happen. So it's an if-then statement, basically, for everything in your business.
Correct. But you also don't want to recreate something here and there and have double
duplication.
Everything.
Sure. So there has
so
to
you've
be
got to avoid that.
Communication there, too, as well.
How do you do this seamlessly to where it doesn't matter that you are there versus here, everything operates the same?
Okay.
And so, I was panicked.
So in order, we're talking a little bit more of like the current stage of that, and you have able to develop a system that very few have, and it's working quite well. It's working so well that it's actually opening Pandora's box to you on what is possible, right? So sure. We'll stop there. Now, go back to walking out of law school, and you're a patent attorney, and they kind of do it one way, right? Like, tell me about the experience of how most people that are into professional services go about that, and your experience there, and how you kind of your evolution to this point.
So I think most, at least my experience has
sure.
been, and I go back to where malpractice carriers made you have paper files, which today
yes.
seems somewhat funny.
Yes, exactly.
But you had to have paper files. They didn't yes. trust non-paper
yes.
files, where now it's realistic, it's flipped the other way.
Yes.
Now if you don't have electronic files, you have a problem.
Big problem.
But I go back to paper files. You right. were not allowed to take a paper file out of the office.
Got
so
it.
If you are working on a project, you have to be there because you can't take a paper file.
What year is this you graduate?
This is circa 1994, 5, 6, 7.
Okay.
Didn't really change very much.
So work was conducted darn near solely in the office outside networking.
Correct. Gotcha. If I am working on a patent file, that file can't physically leave the office.
When did that change?
Yeah, pretty much when I started my own business.
Okay.
Of course, I would bring stuff home and bring stuff back as I needed to.
Yes.
But predominantly in firms, it has worked very... It's relatively rigid, especially in the patent world. Things do not change that quickly.
Sure.
While we write about technology, our embracement of technology is perhaps not the fastest.
Okay.
I still know a lot of people that order three-part files.
Okay.
They're classic patent folders, mm-hmm. the left side, the right side, and the middle, and everything gets put in those folders.
Sure.
That is not very conducive to multiple locations.
Sure.
Can't really take it from one place to the other. So, you know, that's one thing. Second thing is, how do we all have access to all sorts of documents? So that was not an issue before. Everything had to happen in the office.
Yep.
And that's the way it really was. We had no, you know, computerized docketing system that most every law firm has. But you're really using it, by and large, to track deadlines. That's
okay.
it. Everything that's else it. You're doing manually, you're doing on paper, you're recreating a new Word file. You are recreating a new letter to a client.
So it's a glorified timer. File. In a
Correct.
Way.
Correct.
Okay,
Correct.
Gotcha.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's what I think most number of companies today still use it that way.
All right. So you're working for a large firm. You work out of what
Chicago.
Year was this?
This is up through 98.
Okay. We're in Chicago. When did and you up through 90? You left in 98.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What made you leave?
I want to do my own thing. Always want to do my own thing.
Why?
Always had the bug to do my own thing.
Did you see inefficiencies at your current business of employment?
At the current business there? Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But did I carry over a lot of those inefficiencies? Yes.
Because that's the way somebody's already done it. They always done it that way. So
I
why would you do it?
Yeah. Recreated the wheel.
Yeah. Exactly.
I did the exact same thing.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Did that for a number of years. Now, of course, I've got to find my own software because I was not privy to that.
Okay.
So I have to find my own software for tracking time. I have to find my own software for debt, for docketing dates.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, my office is running. I adapted the same file structure,
okay.
same file
same thing,
numbering
so same
structure.
How'd you get clients?
It was just the same old word of mouth.
Okay. You just went out and networked, right?
Drinking
beer.
You got
a good
beer.
Friend. You got a good friend that says what?
Yep.
I make
you make
my money.
All your money drinking coffee.
Drinking coffee. There you go.
So the more people you meet,
yes.
the more things go from there.
Okay.
But as far as the how I ran the office the way I learned how to run the office from the people that ran the office before me.
Absolutely.
That's what I did.
From 98 to, all right, so, and now that has shifted now. Can you
that has shifted. So realistically, I ran it that way. I recreated it a couple times in a couple different formats. But from 2005 on,
okay.
that's the current firm that I'm part of.
Okay.
We've run it for a number of those years the same way as it was run before. Yeah, okay. A few improvements. Yes, we now use Microsoft Word.
So
I'm from back in the day, we had WordPerfect.
WordPerfect, yeah.
So I did. I moved from there, but I still have some old WordPerfect files that linger on the server.
I remember getting a computer in, God, I can't remember. This is middle school, something like high school, whatever. And we didn't purchase the Microsoft Word program yet, but they gave you Works.
Works. But you couldn't save into anything.
You couldn't do anything. It was the most half
worthless.
Yeah, it was bad. All right, so going back to you're doing it the old way. You know, you're doing your networking. You know, again, at the end of the day, one of the things that you learn whenever you're in business, whether it's a paint shop or you're a one man person in professional services, is if you do not sell it, you do not get to execute it. You know, and
correct.
You know, learn correct. That very quickly.
For me, that part, I actually really enjoy what I do.
Yes.
So that part, I enjoy the new, the inventive, the especially when it comes to mechanical devices. That was not as challenging to me.
Okay.
Because that's interesting.
It's
that is my
most.
Normal
but the
course
whole
of how
part.
Stuff works. That part I enjoy. The networking of meeting people, again, centered to what they do, fascinated by them.
How well does law school prepare you to actually go out and get business?
I believe that is a 400 level class, and we end at 300 level.
Okay.
It's not something that's covered.
I don't think it's 400 level. I think it's.
It might be 500 level, but they certainly never
I think
get
it's
to
N
it.
Slash A.
It could be. It could be.
Yeah, exactly.
They do. So not to knock law school. Law school does a phenomenal job of teaching you a gray area.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching
okay.
you how to think of a gray area, especially as a patent attorney coming from an engineering background,
right.
where it's black and white, two and two is always four. I now have to think of it, it's not really two and two. We're not really talking about two and two. We're talking about gray areas.
Okay.
And that's different something angles, that I think law school, correct. Okay. I remember the story that I always tell is, you argued one side, it was this first year, and they said, well, now argue the other side. Well, I can't, they're wrong. And you quickly learn that there is no right, there's no wrong, there's a gray, and where does that gray, where does that line land?
Okay.
Things like that. And law school does a phenomenal job of teaching that.
Sure.
But as far as teaching networking, as far as teaching running of an office, not at all.
Right.
And that involves what I'm saying by running of an office, that includes more than just the networking, the establishing a client base, the growing the client base, but how do you do the nuts and bolts of what you
do? The operation, the back end, all those. You got it. So if you think about where your business is today versus where it was 2005 or the old way of doing it, because you have adopted new ways, tell me the first thing that you can think about that triggered your mind. Where were you? What was going on when you said, I don't have to do it this way?
And so I feel...
It's been steps, right? It hasn't been just... it hasn't been a light switch. It's been
no,
steps.
No, it's been small things over time.
Okay. Do you remember the first?
So I did tend to create certain templates and things to speed things up.
Okay.
I did, relatively early on, try to take advantage of the docketing system to do a little bit more than docketing.
Okay.
But looking back, a lot of those were baby steps. Yes, it's an improvement in efficiency of a couple percent.
Okay.
But I always came from the school that you watch your overhead, yes, not your return on the overhead.
Yes.
And so I think I was relatively slow in adopting, trying new things or setting a course.
Absolutely. It's the top line is X, and that's basically about as many hours as you're willing to jam in. And then when you get better, up your rate.
Correct.
But you still have a fixed number of hours that you physically can't do anything possible. So with that being said, if you are tied to the dollar of, if you're tied to the dollar and the dollar is tied to hourly, that to be said, it's just no investment really makes sense.
Correct. It's very hard because anything you spend on overhead takes away from that 2,000 times X.
Yes, you got it. You got it.
And that's a struggle.
2,000 hours, 40 hours so a week.
Probably one of the big things we did early on was a lot of our things changed to a flat fee arrangement. You want a certain result, the result's going to cost a certain amount.
What year did you do that?
So that is relatively early, like 2006, 7.
Okay.
On the behest of, we have a couple clients that's the way they did everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, we do work for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Microsoft is very much a per project.
Get done. Yep.
This is what it takes. I don't care if it takes you an hour. I don't care if it takes you 100.
Blank slate.
And so we've adopted that throughout our practice.
A value-based
everywhere we
can.
Correct.
Yes.
Which then changes things a little bit.
Yep.
But that still did not yield that many new changes. It was really small incremental changes.
Those are incremental. But yeah. Incremental. I see where you're going, but they're in the right direction.
Incremental. I think the biggest thing that happened was the, if I want to move to another area, how can I possibly make this seamless?
Sure.
That's really where the big
changes. And that discussion started, that discussion for you started.
Almost two and a half years ago.
No, it was a hell of a lot earlier than that.
It may,
whenever
no,
you started dating Kimber.
Sure. That started 6-7 years ago, but yeah,
the actual panic
set in a couple years ago.
Yeah, the gun to the head mentality.
Correct.
Sorry, there was no guns or whatever.
There were no
but
guns,
it was,
no.
You know, but Mama Bear
especially because I'm in California now, there can't be any guns.
The guns are bad. Yeah.
that's where the panic came in.
Yeah, okay, so I remember. Call it 3 years ago, it really was like, this is going to happen.
How can I do things different? How can I take advantage of it's automate, delegate, delete?
So this was just discussed in our office a couple hours ago, actually. You went from that can't be done to where maybe if it could be done, or let's say if it could be done, how might it go about?
How could one go
how
about doing
how could one go about doing that? What would have to happen? Mm-hmm. Which is a very simple, the words are almost similar. And the same amount of words, but a completely different mindset.
It's a big shift in thinking.
Absolutely.
But then I think the automate, delegate, or delete is really what makes everything click.
Automate, delegate, or delete. Yep.
It's really those three events.
That's Sam's?
Yes.
Yeah.
So everything
system,
you do.
Sam Carpenter, we're going to give him props. He's amazing. That book is. That ebook is phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Those three. Now you start thinking about how to make that. It could be done. Mm-hmm. Now you're adding some concrete steps to that.
Well, now you, what law school taught you to do is now you got a bunch of gray areas once you lay everything out. So if you lay out start to finish what the system's supposed to look, or what your process looks like, and I remember watching you do this, it was, you took so many things for granted that I just do this. Nobody stopped and asked you why you did that. Well, I just do it, right? So if you just do, okay, how do I teach somebody else? What's that gray area point? And then there's pivot points. If this, then that. If this,
correct.
Then that.
Sure.
If this, then
and
that, yeah.
All of these processes really break down into steps.
Sure.
Everything that I do breaks down into steps. And you can look at it no different than if I'm going to fly an airplane, it is a checklist of steps.
Sure.
Now, there's talent involved, there's skill involved, but at the end of the day, you can break these into finite steps.
Yes.
And if you take a look at all the steps, my involvement or where I feel my expertise lies is in two or three of these steps of 50.
Mm-hmm.
The other 47, 48, arguably not only am I the right guy to do it, I'm probably not the right guy to do it. Mm-hmm. There's probably yep. somebody that can do it more efficiently and better than I can
yep.
outside of my area of expertise, sure. but I've always done it because that's the firm did in 1994.
That's what you did, right?
Keep it going.
I'm the attorney. I got to do it.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so once you look at every step as automate, delegate, or delete, it changes your, it is life changing. It changes your, it shifts your entire focus on to not only is it possible, but now I've at least got some mechanics on how to do it.
So business currently today, all right, let's keep going through it too. We'll talk about that in a second. So you made, the notable thing you started doing was Sam's advice, automate, delegate,
correct.
Delete, right? Did you have to, God, you really haven't. I know you haven't. Did you have to invest in a bunch of new softwares? Do you have a bunch of new people? Do you have a bunch of...
So I did. What I did was...
They're excited about your story.
Apparently they are.
They
thank
are.
You. what I essentially looked at the software we had,
mm-hmm.
and I had a couple... I don't want to say, like, I always call them in the patent world aha moments, when you've come up with the next step of a improvement.
Okay.
But I had a couple aha moments where I looked at a piece of software that we had, and said, okay, I'm using 5% of it. It has another 95% that we're probably manually doing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe parts of it we don't need.
Yep.
But there are parts of it that we're manually doing that the software is actually set up that it could do. What can we do with that?
This is when and when you started doing this, you knew you were getting onto something. Something new, at least.
I knew I was on to something with respect to automating things to not take the human out of it, but to leave the human with the human part and have everything else correct, accurate, not have to be double-checked because our data is correct.
It's almost improving the human in it because the human's worried about less things and they're focusing on really the art form of what you do.
They're focused on the only part that is critical for a human to do.
Right, you got it. And therefore, by freeing them by the other robotic stuff, the human can just mm-hmm. focus on that. And because that was another struggle when you have all these patents come along. I mean, focus was a struggle for you. I mean,
you were
stressed out of your mind
hard.
For a while.
Again, if you have someone just sending letters out and they're 99% accurate, and you send 1,000 letters out, there's a lot of them that are wrong.
Yeah.
And that's 99% accuracy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, one wrong per hire, you got 10 letters that are wrong. That's not good.
No.
And that's going to happen. You can't stop that. Now, what if you have information, a lot of information in these letters, a lot of things to double check. So maybe 1,000 letters, each letter might have 15 items.
Mm-hmm.
That's 15,000 items. Mm-hmm. If you're 99% accurate, all of a sudden these numbers start changing.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you could take out the clearly mistakes of incompetence, meaning things that are simple that you just got wrong because you were in a hurry to look at something else. You wrote your social security number down wrong because you were in a hurry. You transposed two numbers of your credit card because you were in a hurry. You can eliminate that and focus on the attorney work where everything else happens automatically. You're onto something.
So people listening to this, a bunch of people are not attorneys. And let's say some of them take a look at them, without looking at their business, if their initial response is, yeah, but my business is different. It's highly customizable. What's your initial feedback when you hear that?
So a patent application is somewhere on the order of 6,000 to 8,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
about 7,500 of those words are custom every time. Mm-hmm. There are
every time.
10 sheets of drawings.
Yep.
None of which were in any other application that I've ever made.
Yeah, you didn't cross over 9 from the last project or whatever.
No, there's very little overlap. But the process of how you go about drafting one, the process that it goes through, has the same typical steps. And I think that's true for most people. You're a custom equipment manufacturer. You're not starting with zero. You're starting with the machines that you had made in the past, and you're now making something different. Mm-hmm. There's still an ability to systematize and make processes of what you are doing. And I feel that anytime you make a process, you will improve from where you are without the process. And from there, you can hone things in.
So here's what I've learned when I start dissecting this stuff. Those who think their business is, you can't do these processes, or can't do systems with their business, aren't doing any or barely, they're missing the boat on it.
Completely.
So, right? So I can judge based, I can just purely on the response, I can judge where their head's at, right? No different than anything, right?
Sure.
On the other side, like, we know mutual friends of ours and some people together, we know people that we walk in, they have amazing systems, and they're the ones, when you ask them about their systems, they're like, oh, it could be so much better.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because once you break the skin of shifting differently and you start just dissecting every gray area and all the kind of stuff like that, it's not perfect. Like, you had to, had to start
your
with
version
1.0.
Right?
Version 1.0.
It is version 1.0.
We're talking people that have been doing it for 20, 30 years, and it is, to the outside looking in, is an amazing system. But when you've studied something for 25 years, maybe they would call it 90%. They still see 10% that would be, you know what I mean? The opportunity, like, I don't think you're never done with it.
No, one of the things, and Sam mentions this several times, is that when you run into a problem, it is an opportunity.
Oh, yes.
To tweak that system. I just noticed there's an issue. We do a fair amount of work that comes in from overseas.
Yep.
We have not sent a particular document. Now, everything's been filed, everything's been done.
Right.
But the way we store our data, we have twice over the last 100 files, so 98% accuracy, twice not sent, hey, we also filed this. We sent the receipt that it was filed, but not a copy of what was filed, because of the way our stuff is stored on our hard drive, on the server. That's an opportunity to tweak it.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. We did everything. We did it all right, but you know what? Twice it didn't come out right. The client had to ask, hey, you guys did file this, correct? I see it on the receipt. Can you send me a copy?
Okay. Cool. All right.
That's an opportunity to tweak that.
To tweak it, yeah.
It's a small thing, but now...
So if the quick fix is 5 seconds, you know, it takes 5 minutes of your person's time to attach, send, good. 99% of the people stop there. They don't take a step back what's going on, be like, why did that happen and how do I fix it?
How do I ensure that from now on it is automated?
Mm-hmm.
Because for us, what we do, and the reason it happened, was we store that particular document in another spot for a number of reasons. How do we fix that?
Yes. To me, it's going down to, and I don't know if Sam talks about it, it's been a while since I've read the book, but I still get his stuff. But to me, it's there's things in business that you do that are reactive, and whenever you have a client base, you're going to be somewhat reactive.
Sure.
Right? But you actually have a pretty big choice to determine how reactive versus proactive you're going to be. And the more proactive of an organization you are, the more you get to control the process, the more you spend your energy, your attention, your expertise on developing value for your customer base, and the less time you are literally chasing cats and herding cats on a reactive basis.
Sure, let me give an example. Every patent gets a point of negotiation, a rejection, an office action. People call it a number of different things.
Right.
You can turn around and send that to your client. Mm-hmm. We just received this. This came in the mail today. It's due on this day. Thank you very much. The client may call you 3 or 4 or 5 times based on that. I can also send a letter that details a number of parameters of things that need to be done, what I need from the client, what I don't need from the client. I can automate 95% of that letter and then put in the substance of what my rejection was. The rest of the automation, because typically they will call about a deadline, a next step. So if you take all of the questions that you have had over the last, for me, 20 years, incorporate that into the letter, automate all of the data and the dates and everything going in, I can spend my entire time focused on the substance of the item that came in.
Okay,
they have all the
answers
on when things happened. I have spent time on that. What is important about this file? What makes this file different than every other file?
Automation is not designed to remove the human of this transaction, in my opinion. Okay? So, like, I don't want to remove the human side of what we do, or the human interaction that we have with a client. I just don't want there to be repetitive tasks that could have been answered in different ways. If I'm going to have a 5-minute conversation with a client, I'd rather it be focused on proactive, meaning whatever it is, strategy and that kind of stuff, versus the things I've answered already 12 times today.
So the product is better. Mm-hmm. I've gotten any question that they could have that is procedural. Mm-hmm. When is it due? What do I have to do? What documents do you need from me? What do you need from me? Procedurally, all taken care of. I know it's accurate. It's automated. It is perfect. And I can focus on, in this particular situation, here are the other patents that have been identified. Here's a particular issue we have. So all of the client's easy questions are answered. They focus on that part to explain to me why they are different, for example.
Sure.
They can address that.
Sure.
Without asking me 15 questions on
you can get right down to the heart of the matter.
Correct.
Yep. Got it.
So you can focus them, you're focused, they're focused, you spend your time dealing with the issue, not all the circumstance around the issue.
So revenue comparison, and you can just say, you know, how much you've grown from 5 years ago to now.
The growth has been tremendous.
Okay.
And
stress.
The stress level's changed dramatically. I now have I always call patent law happy law. You know that.
Yes.
It's happy law. I'm enforcing people's rights. I'm trying to establish rights for people.
Right. You're trying to secure revenue for 25 years.
Correct.
Yes.
I'm trying to do things that are essentially very positive.
Yes.
So my stress level is much different in the sense that I don't worry about the deadlines. I don't worry about, I got a phone call, he doesn't know when this is due. What documentation do I need to be provided? All of that stuff just gets handled, taken care of. I can focus on, okay, how do we secure the broadest rights? That's fun.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's,
you don't have to worry about all the other
stuff. That's what I enjoy doing.
Along with owning a business.
Correct.
Or most of it. That's awesome. All right.
Not to say that there are not
there's other
continuous
things.
Improvements that can happen.
Absolutely. But you got the trap now, and you just keep adding to it, you know?
Correct.
You got to start with something.
Absolutely. Right?
So, let's see. One thing that you've learned through your career, kind of a broad range thing that you think could help anyone.
And I am very much into a system mindset.
Yeah.
Going and looking at all of the things that you do, identifying the different things that you do,
mm-hmm.
and going through the exercise of saying, what can I automate, what can I delegate, what can I delete? It's not to be less busy, it's to spend your time doing what your calling is, what your focus is.
We all have an energy bucket, right?
Like correct.
Every day we wake up, you have an energy bucket. Some have a little bit more than others. You know, you can change it a little bit with caffeine and Red Bull or whatever.
So you can only do it. All that is short term.
You can only do so much.
Right? All short term.
It's just short term. Where are you going to delegate your energy, right? Where do you want it to go? And I think before you build the system or before you start even diving into the process, I think your reason why I'm doing this is going to come from, where am I the most valuable? Like, what should I only be doing?
Where do I provide value? Where do I enjoy providing value?
Yeah. And the two are actually typically directly aligned.
Very much so.
You're probably pretty good at what you enjoy doing. That just so happens.
Very much so. And that's, yeah, one feeds the other, right? Chicken and
the egg. Yeah, and you and I have talked about this more and more and more. It's your business acumen. It's you understanding how a business works. And you just so happen to monetize that through your ability to develop a great patent form, but you cannot develop the patents that you've created without truly understanding their business on another level that most people can't really understand.
It does evolve. I would agree.
Absolutely.
I would
agree. Absolutely. But we talked about that. That is your gift. That is your gift that puts you in the 1% of what you do, is that being able to marry the two together, and but see where that person's trying to go, understand the relationships they may, understand the angles that they're making. Because how many times does somebody say that they're going to make X patent, and you're like, no, you're not. You're going to go this way. You're going to do this. Like, you do that every day.
Sure. So I don't enjoy just you get a new patent and you write a patent, you file.
Yeah.
That's not enjoyable to me.
Exactly.
But I spend a ton of time meeting with them, understanding what they do, the direction that they're going.
What is it going
to
mean for you?
Because it all feeds from there. What's your next step? It's not, it is a cat and mouse game. It's not, I'm going to get one patent, I'm done. It is, how do you feed this whole web? How do you make this whole thing?
It's a structure.
Fascinating.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. All right. That's, you know, that's really helpful. But I think there's just a, you know, if from one thing from this talk, and, you know, we offline out of this camera, we talk about systems a lot in our business, and Alex is glaring at me right now because I talk about systems all the time in our business and different things. I mean, I guess our hope from this conversation is that you become more open-minded to that thing that you don't think can have a process to it, that's only you and can be only you. I would take it just to consider, like Jovan's.
There is a
like
part Jovan's that law. May be you.
There is a part that may be you, but it's not 100%. No. I guarantee it doesn't have to be 100% all you. And I'm telling you, I'm sitting here with somebody who 6 years ago thought it had to be all him. And now it's a 180. And the cool thing is business goes up, stress goes down, so quality of life is way up. Right?
What you look for is, how am I going to make that next jump?
It'd be so much
jump.
Better if you're in West Michigan and not California.
And it's back and forth a lot.
Paying 84% in taxes, but yeah.
Back and forth a lot.
Back and forth a lot. All right. You're 18 years old again. What do you tell the 18-year-old version?
Well, I have, my son's not that much.
I know. So what do you tell some? Yep,
so,
exactly. You could go to that.
I'm very big on finding something that, yes, you're passionate about, but that's pretty much where people stop. Something you're passionate about that you can monetize.
Okay. So you think the straight up, I'm passionate about this, is a little too fluffy.
It's not concrete enough.
Well, you gotta marry the two.
To me, you have to figure out how you're going to monetize.
Else you're just over it.
And there are so many different things. Right, you are just over it. Yeah. There are so many ways you can monetize something, but the quicker you think about how,
yes,
I think you're in a much better position.
And it doesn't have to be immediate. It could be long-term how you're going to really, truly monetize, especially if you're 18 years old. But you better start putting in the building blocks now and working towards it. And the internet has allowed people to be able to monetize different ways than in the past.
Absolutely. But stopping at the go do what you're passionate about, I think shortchanges kids.
Okay.
Because they get to a 23, 24, and they're like, well, I'm passionate. It should all just work.
Right.
Well, you have to think about the second part.
Right. There is an economic component to where...
How do I marry the thing that I'm very passionate about?
Yep.
With a monetization stream.
I kind of go like, what do you want to make? What are you good at?
Sure. That's another way to look.
You know,
sure.
Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then because I do think we kind of miss this, we know people where, well, gosh, I really, really enjoy this. But maybe they grew up a lifestyle that was, you know, a lot different, where there was a lot more money, so to speak, or a lot more disposable income. And they're like, well, gosh, nobody told me about that. Well, that is a different income. Now, if you're okay with giving that up and doing this because you love it, awesome.
I just want
you to know that. You know,
you can't do one without the other. Mm-hmm. So you can't look at the one because then you're unhappy. You're doing a profession you're unhappy about, but now you're stuck.
Yeah.
And that's not positive. You know how that turns out 30 years down the road.
You got it.
But to follow your passion without some way to monetize it is also, again, a very difficult. You're apt to be disappointed.
Okay.
And I think that the thing that's interesting, which you said, there's so many different ways to monetize. There are so many different ways that you can proceed with a certain background.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you are locked in, I'm going to go study X, which means I have to go do Y.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So a lot of times I look at, okay, what are you interested in? And then scholastically, how can you tie that interest to something scholastically that A, can help you in the short term, but then also B, help you in the long term?
I think there's a third component to this. So it's like, you know, what do you want to do? What do you enjoy doing? You know, and then involving the income, understanding how to monetize. But then I think there's a disconnect of the amount of work, especially if it's more sexy of an industry. I think there's a disconnect of how patient you need to be and how much you need to work at doing it. Like, if you're truly enjoying it and you really want to monetize, like, if you want to be a YouTube influencer by being able to shoot a free throw 20 different ways, and you make 100% of them all the time, you have to do it 14 hours a day.
Sure.
You can't do it 2 hours a week and say, I'm going to get there and I'm passionate about it. Because then you're really not truly that passionate about it. So
no, that's true.
Of all of it. Mm-hmm. But the reason why we'd be passionate about it is because it does take a lot of energy deployed in that area. So hopefully if you're deploying a lot of energy, hopefully it doesn't feel like work. That's
absolutely true.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think you can get to, for example, if you go to study law.
Okay.
There are so many avenues that you can go down later. Doesn't mean that you're going to be in this area or that area or the, you know, in some particular area. There's so many angles that you can take.
Yeah.
And don't lose the focus that there's a number of different ways to monetize it. You're not going to have to do it a certain way.
Yes.
But exactly. I think you have to look at passion and dollars. Yes. So if it does not make sense dollar-wise, you probably have other passions that might make a little more sense.
Exactly. Wherever you feel like you can put in a superior level of effort.
Yes, sure.
And not be nauseous by it. Yeah, exactly. All right, a couple more questions that I'm just going to come up with myself. You have one team, only one team you can root for, Chicago Bears or Chicago Cubs.
Listen, I can't answer that.
I can't answer that. All right.
I can't answer that.
We went with no. I went with no. Hey, well, you know, the Cubs have done
better. It depends on what month it is. Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, it kind of, you know.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, my dream was always to watch the Bears and the Cubs at the same time. The Cubs in the World Series at the same time the Bears season was starting.
That is
took years to happen, but no, I can't pick one.
Okay, all right, gotcha. How about who do you dislike more, the Lions or the Packers?
So I lived here for, 14 years?
Yes.
But I'm going to have to go with the Packers.
You dislike them?
I dislike the Packers more. I grew up so close to the Wisconsin border.
Yeah.
That it's just, that's entrenched.
Yeah, and I think the Packer fans feel the same way about the
Packers. I think so too.
I think it's a mutual friend.
Sure.
What about Minnesota? They irritate you?
Not so much. They're really, to me, a 70s team. You know, Frank Tarkington retired how many years ago? That is what I think of when I think of, you know, and I probably, you know, the Packers beat us up so bad all these years that it's just intensified.
That's true.
So maybe if the Lions were better and if Minnesota was better, it'd be different.
I think it's really hard to hate the Lions because it's hard. Like, you know,
what are they going to do? 57, I think.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, not that the Bears are much better this year.
Well, Jovan, thanks for joining us today here at Grand Rapids Brewing. Thank you for housing us there. And
absolutely. Yeah, we're going to have another one.
Tower. Yep. And where can we find you? You're on LinkedIn, right?
I'm on LinkedIn. Yes.
You're on Facebook.
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn. I have a website. Yes, I am. Good for you.
And so you shuttle back and forth. How often are you here? Well, once a month?
So at least once a month. Okay. I was in the Midwest twice this. Okay. I was in the Midwest last weekend, this week, Chicago last week, Michigan this week. Typically once a month for at least a week.
Open for speaking engagements like the one you're doing where?
So Dubai next month. That's two different ones.
Yeah.
Two different IP forums.
Okay.
Very interesting topic, which is why I did the one of them for sure. And then I was already there.
Sure.
We're in such an anti-patent climate. So that's great. We are. I mean, technically, it's an anti-patent climate right now. But that doesn't mean you stop doing anything.
No.
It's how do you work within that, which I think is a fascinating topic.
Okay.
Because you still have to move forward. I still have a 20-year right that I'm trying to protect.
Sure.
I got to do something. I can't just fold.
Right.
And at that point, it's a very interesting topic.
Gotcha.
And it's Dubai. I'd love to see it. So, hey.
There you go.
Where's the downside there?
That's good. That's good. So. Well, thanks so much, brother.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's another episode. We will see you soon.